Welcome to the Experience Focused Leaders Podcast. My name is Alex Shevelenko. I'm CEO and founder of Relate2, and we are on a mission, both with the podcast and with Relate2, to bring the most important ideas to life. And how do we do that? We do that through amazing, immersive, engaging experiences that move your organization forward, move your customers forward, and move us as a society forward. So if you love ideas, if you love bringing these ideas to life, stick around. Also, at the end of the podcast, we'll reveal how you could potentially be a guest speaker on the podcast as well. Let's get started. Today's guest is Luke Giancarlo, director of the New York FinTech Innovation Lab, a global incubator helping early growth stage startups collaborate with major financial institutions. He is also an executive at Accenture, where he is leading Accenture's digital currency treasury offering and co-author Digital Dollar Project. Luke, welcome to the pod.
Alex, what's going on? It's good to see you again. You leave out in your intro that you are also an alumni.
We are very, very proud alumni of Accenture's FinTech Innovation Lab. I think when we got accepted, we were probably not qualified to do it. I don't know how it happened. It was two guys and a dog with an idea. And the lab has been absolutely tremendous at helping us validate our idea with large financial institutions. And then Accenture, as you know, has been absolutely tremendous at actually taking some of that idea, and because it was able to move way faster than some of those large financial institutions, helped us shape it, and it was effectively one of our first customers, where we built a tech-enabled offering, you know, supporting Accenture and the teams. And, you know, it would absolutely, positively could not have happened if it wasn't for the lab. I think, you know, when I look back, I think we got the genesis of our idea of what is now Relate2 AI, slightly different focus and organization, but like the all the learnings came from the lab. So I'm a huge fan. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to invite you. It's a well-known program in certain circles, as with large institutions, but I think a lot more, you know, startups and scale-ups should learn about it. Tell us more, like, what's your take on the program and the role it fits in the ecosystem?
Yeah, thanks. And honestly, that was an awesome intro for the program. I feel like you could do it for me.
Yeah, but the smallest company working with one of the largest institutions in the world. Where would that happen? Only at the lab, right?
Like, there, oh my gosh, the salesman in you. I see it. Great marketing mind. But yeah, no, thank you. So the FinTech Lab, I'll give the history of it. It's been around for 15 years. We as Accenture co-founded it with an organization called the Partnership Fund for New York City. And we founded it really after the financial crisis in 2009 as a way to compete with the West Coast and bring some of that FinTech innovation back to New York City to really be with the center and the hub for finance, right, with the Wall Street banks and the financial institutions that are based here in New York. So 15 years later, we're really going strong. It's been an amazing program. For your viewers, the way it works is every year we sit down with executives from these financial institutions across payments, banking, capital markets, and insurance.
And I know you don't want to stand out some of these institutions, but maybe it will just help bring to life the Goldmans and the Morgans and whoever else you're working with, like, not to treat anybody in a special way, but just give us some names of the institutions that you work
with. I mean, no, you named them. Like, they're all tier one organizations, right? The Black Rocks, the Goldmans, the JP Morgans, Bank of America. On the insurance side, you know, New York Life, Travelers, TIA. So really phenomenal organizations that we represent and help them find startup companies. And so, to your point, you get like a really diverse spectrum of these financial institutions that are like legacy organizations with a lot of red tape, but are really the big players in the room. And every year we sit down to understand what are their innovation priorities across the different parts of their business, the different technologies that they're really interested in. So we've gone through all the waves, right? We've gone through cloud, metaverse, sustainability, blockchain. Now it's all AI, of course. But every year we take that feedback, we go find startup companies that are solving for those problems, and we bring them into the Shark Tank, and it's a competitive program until we eventually have top 10 companies. And what's unique about the lab is those top 10 companies then get paired up with those financial institutions. So over the course of 3 months, you get kind of three to seven dedicated financial institutions to really mentor you, help you refine that product market fit, really understand what is the sweet spot for you and your business. And it works, right? I think you're even a testament to that of having being in the room working with those financial institutions. You really get that experience to help refine your product. And I think you even mentioned you after the program, you were able to kind of tweak or fine-tune that offering that you had.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think now we almost and you know, the startup journey is it goes in mysterious ways, obviously. So I think the challenge with supporting large financial institutions or any very large and regulated enterprise is obviously the velocity with which they can adopt new technology. So we had Accenture became effectively kind of more relatively more agile adopter, and then helped us get the feedback on the technology working. And then, for example, now when we're building the world's first regulated content platform, guess what? Like the lab, you know, we want to come back to the people we've met in the lab because we've actually now have something that's working, and we don't need to go wait for kind of you know, instant feedback that you could get maybe quicker in some other ways. And what we need is like, how do we deploy this strategically inside your institution so this becomes a real game changer for you? So there's this tension, I would say, and I'm curious again on your take on this and how you help companies do this, right? If you're building a relatively horizontal solution, you know, how do you get feedback quickly as a startup is sort of really critical. Versus spend all your cycles in the enterprise sales cycles. But then, you know, if you don't have that option, right, and you're building something that is very much enterprise only, how do you find the right partners to pilot your technology with so they could give you that feedback? Those are sort of some of the tensions that many startups underestimate. Maybe you could comment on that a little bit on how you help them pick and choose which partners to work with, for example, and what areas to focus on.
Yeah, and it's funny, right? I'm sure your viewers are like, wait a second, Relay2 is not a fintech. But our audience is really pure fintechs, pure insurtechs, but really horizontal plays as well, right? The data management, the security platforms, the marketing platforms, the HR tools. But like, how are you helping to enable financial institutions as they go to market to be more effective, more efficient? So the lab really has kind of that flavor to it. But to answer your question, I think a lot of it is kind of the things you mentioned, right? But not just having a great technology, but really being able to solve a problem in the market and spending time with these financial institutions to understand what are the pain points, what are they struggling with, and not just like, hey, here, look how cool my technology is, but like, how can it really solve for you, right? How can it really be an enabler and help your job be easier or more effective in what you're doing constantly? And so that's like been a big focus for us. And so the lab, it gives you time to really spend with their procurement teams to understand, you know, what are their DevSecOps requirements, what are their legal requirements, you know, how do they think about contracting, and be able to ask those questions really open and honestly to understand what's going to take you to get through those hurdles. And then spending time with their strategy teams and their technology teams and saying, you know, where does this fit on your roadmap? You know, where are your priorities? How can this complement those? And on the tech side, you know, what is your current tech stack? What type of integrations do you need? What are you comfortable with? What type of data sharing are you okay with? And so all of those questions really help startup companies refine their product and take like a great idea and make it even better to really be purpose suited for financial institutions or large enterprises.
And what, you know, what's in it for Accenture in this journey, right? Like, so I think we, you know, we obviously know that Accenture is not going to make money, you know, servicing startups as a customer, right? Their work was the largest institutions. How does this work, and why are you investing? By the way, for those of you that are startups, like sometimes you have to pay equity and pay fees to participate in programs, and this is, you know, this program is very generous in the way it sets up, you know, practical conversations and engagement. So how do you, how and why do you decide to sponsor this and invest in this? Now, how many years? So this is
15. Yeah, we
15,
just finished
15
our
years,
15th,
right?
going to our
Yeah.
16th. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And I laugh. I almost call it the lab, like the best kept secret,
Yeah.
or it's the best word of mouth program out there because, you know, the Techstars, the Y Combinators, they're great. But what
Yeah.
we really solve for is helping you get that exposure to the financial institutions. But to answer your question, like what's in it for Accenture, truly, and this is rare, but we founded it as a CITIC program with the New York City Partnership Fund, and we try to keep it that way. And so everybody that's involved, it's pro bono. So the financial institutions are coming to the table. They're not paying anything in except their time commitment, which nowadays feel more valuable than cutting a check. And for the startup companies, to your point, we're non-dilutive. You don't pay anything. We don't take any equity. We just really want you to get that exposure. And so what we get out of it is one, helping to keep New York a center for fintech and innovation and advancing the New York community, which is sort of
And
why
I
we
think you've done a great job on that.
yeah.
Like that's it's definitely booming in that sense.
Yeah. And the other thing for us is, you know, it's a great way for us to understand what financial institutions, what they're struggling with, right? What are their problems? What are the pain points? And especially as they think about how to adopt innovation or how to reinvent their processes, you know, what are those pain points? And we could be in the room alongside them as they think those through. But then also for the, there's a lot of great startup companies out there, and we could spend time with you guys to understand, you know, how are you solving for financial institutions, which many of them are our clients. And you've been a great success story, right? If you come out of the program, we can actually partner with you and bring you to our clients and say, hey, look, we know this company works because we've seen it with 40 other financial institutions. You know, we think they'd be great for you in this specific project. So actually, Alex, maybe you, I'm for me as well, maybe talk about some of those projects that you've done with Accenture as much as you can in terms of how you actually have collaborated and use your platform for some of our large financial institutions.
Well, look, Giancarlo, as you know, the Mr. Luke, the first rule about Accenture is you don't talk about Accenture. I think this is my the Luke. I think one of the things that I can't talk about though is actually what we've done was the lab, and I think
Yeah.
that's sort of one of the. And you could comment about an engagement from that, but I think one of the things that we love, like from the very early days of being in the lab, is that you know there are some people that talk about innovation and invest in innovation, but actually don't do it in a particular innovative ways. And the lab was very open to, you know, to trying out Relate2 like as itself, and so we could show some of the results of
Yeah, I get that eat her
that.
own dog food, right? So,
Yeah, like so. Well, we think of it as champagne and caviar,
there you go.
obviously,
Eat her
but
own caviar, I should say. Yeah.
yeah, this is New York. Well, so here you go. So this is an example that's public version of a hub, which contains the kind of a what we call a portal. And so this portal could contain videos. Here you could see a video, a scrollable site, and a bunch of presentations of the startups that were participating, and then the videos of all these startups all in one place. You could ask it questions with AI chat, which is actually new at the time that it was launched. It was kind of not available, so we could find the needle in the haystack here. And then there's a landing page, which is what got shared in the press releases and other announcements that you guys have done, introducing the companies. Right. And so for every company, there's a video here that's immersively playing, and a deck that's sort of similar to the deck that you've seen before that you could just walk through. You know, you could still download them, play full screen, navigate through them if you want to. But that's sort of the very simple idea. And the beauty of this is that you could do this in seconds with AI. And so that's something that's, you know, an iterative process, because if you're building a consumable experience like this, before you put AI into everything, you actually need to make sure that it actually does the engagement and works. And so this is something that we've experimented with the lab. And then it's just a very practical, simple way to get the message out. And you imagine like wearing the hats of some of your corporate sponsors, right? Like they meet all these startups. They are probably not the individuals in the who are supporting the startups initially are probably not the ones who will be deeply engaging with the startups in the actual deployment. So they need to explain it clearly. Here's the startup, here's what they do, here's their quick, you know, introduction. And so you're effectively enabling your champions from these corporates to be more successful. And I think that's really in line with the mission, I think, of what you want to do, is like bring practical innovation that actually makes it out of project hypothesis into reality.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's less of innovation theater and really putting you in the room and putting it to the Shark Tank and see how you do with, you know, some of the biggest financial institution giants in the world. And, you know, they're not going to take the fluff either. They're really going to grill you and test it and make sure that it works. So that's what the lab's focus on.
And like on that note, like one of the things that, for example, so we're obviously focusing on content and all of this is approved, right? These startups giving you their formal deck, these videos are approved. You don't want this modified, lost. And one of the things that you could then see is like the engagement level, right? And so you could see, hey, that's really interesting. Like people are engaging with this idea or that idea, or everybody's booking meetings here. And so that's an interesting indicator of, you know, what's working, what's not. And even, you know, whether it's a format and the layout of how you present the information or the actual substance of what's inside, it seems ridiculous, but in 2025, 24, we're still kind of making a prayer, sealing some PDFs into their paper first kind of form factor for digital, and shipping them over and hoping, you know, we know what happens. And so this is a very simple, simply fixable opportunity, but you do need to, you know, have the mindset of somebody who's willing to cares about the impact and is compliant, so you could get this done in a compliant way. For example, this had to go through Accenture compliance, cookie settings, everything that is not so trivial. As like, oh, I'm going to go sign up to a consumer site and create something on my own.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I, one of my first real roles I had was like a marketing director, for actually a nursing home that my family ran growing up. And this was over a decade ago when the hot stuff in marketing was like SEOs and like geo advertising. And like, we were trying to optimize our like web space across our different mediums. And so like, it's amazing how much in marketing and technology has evolved over the past decade. Even like, I think you've got an interesting journey around when you started in the lab, it was a very kind of specific use case. Now you've injected it with AI. And to take a step back, you know, every year we interview the financial institutions to understand what are their innovation priorities. And the past 2 years, no surprise, it's been very much AI focused. But AI applicably to back office, you know, how do I make my teams more effective, more efficient, and embed co-pilots? We're just starting to see this year more of an attention and a demand for AI in more front office applications, right? How are you giving hyper-personalized experiences? How are you better managing your customer data, both for like generating it, but also collecting it, synthesizing it as well? And I think you've been on an amazing journey to bring it back to you. From when you started in the lab, having a very specific use case, and now you've been able to scale it and really put it to hyperdrive by using AI. And I think it's been interesting to see how kind of marketing in general and how you guys as a platform have really evolved with technologies to be more purpose-built as well.
Yeah, very interesting. Like we even call what we're building regenerative AI. And the idea is that in regulated industry, so part of it is regulated and part of it is like we really are regenerating approved content. And I think this is what you use the word hyper personalized. I think it's I think the world that we live in with probabilistic models is very risky for regulated industries. And that's one of the reasons why you historically had adoption internally. Right, because the risk is a little bit lower in internal applications, outside of maybe accounting, and then the risk in customer-facing communications where you're misrepresenting things or kind of hallucinating in any possible way is much, much higher. Right, the reputational risk is not sometimes worth the efforts to improve the experience, and so what ends up happening is really something horrible, actually, for customers in financial services, like it, because they are bombarded with a lot of dense information, and you know, in that world, whereas everywhere else they have like TikToks for everything and short form for this, and it's sort of like sound bites, except for in like really strategic, you know, personal investment decisions, like insurance we mentioned, right? So we found this applications in helping employees make employee benefits decisions, which is in the US, like half of the families worry if they will go bankrupt or not due to healthcare emergency, right? Like, and so, and you know, ironically, you know, all of that information comes from insurance carriers and ends up being kind of a mess of downloadables that are barely readable. And so people kind of just tick defaults and resent it very much, because 25% of payments for employee, you know, employee costs go to these benefits in the US market, and nobody understands it. I think sometimes even the brokers that sell it have a hard time understanding it. They have call centers of people that are struggling to understand how to answer questions. Certainly employees don't understand it. And HR is overwhelmed with like answering the same questions and, you know, being at risk for getting fired because the CEO also enrolls in benefits. And if that's really messy, like it's not a good answer. And so we see this tragedy that something that's so critical, such a relevant topic right now about the healthcare cost that's increasing, is just basically burdened by the fact that the form factor of how to explain it has not changed. Complexity and regulated nature has increased. And I think it started with health insurance, but it goes to 401k retirement plans, which are now liberated, and so on and so forth. So we see a huge need for innovation there. But also, like, we could, you know, even with us being regulated first and, you know, being very meticulous about taking minimal risks in kind of how the content get it segmented and using AI specifically for that. The moment you could bring up AI in some cases, people immediately kind of get worried in some places because of the regulatory nature of this. So this is I think this is kind of a disconnect that we see in the ecosystem. I'm curious, what do you, is that in line with what you're seeing as well in some of the startups that are maybe applying this to B2B2C applications are seeing?
Yeah, I mean, B2C and even internal as well. I mean, it's pervasive, right? And I think kind of part of the double-edged sword of AI is the hallucinations. And so we're having a lot of success with companies that are coming in focused on guardrails or how do you ensure that you are compliant. So like last year we had a company called Palki. And their platform called Palki Prisma is very focused on sitting alongside AI LLMs in order to ensure that they are compliant and actually looks at global regulation to make sure that those platforms don't hallucinate and stay kind of focused and on task and within kind of established compliance for financial institutions. So I think just one great example of how we're seeing companies trying to solve for some of these problems. But you're right, it's not just like customer engagement and giving you the confidence to make sure that your customer engagement is on brand, saying the right things, not giving any false information to your customers, but also like how are you better enabling your employees, right? How are they being more effective, more aware, more secure within their roles, especially I think as we go through a really radical shakeup with HR and what future of work looks like post AI. And just touch on that for a minute. It's interesting, like coming out of the pandemic, there was a lot of tools around remote work and remote collaboration tools, and how are you trying to bring people together in a digital world? Now with AI, that's all being shaken up and automated again. And I think there's another big shift coming through with talent management around what does the future of work look like when a lot of this is automated, and a lot of this can be done with an AI, and how do people fit in the middle and are using these tools. And so I think these are like real problems that we're trying to solve for, But I think the way you've gone about it with making sure that you're using AI to inform and educate those personnel on really kind of opaque, whether it's financial information, investment decisions, healthcare, insurance, like these are great tools or resources that AI can then better digest and communicate to employees.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think historically we thought of HR as a pure compliance function, right? And I think but every HR person deeply is not, they don't, people don't go in HR, you know. And I used to be early at the company called SuccessFactors, which Accenture implements and got acquired by SAP. And so we've seen that a lot of the personalities that are drawn to HR, like they want to connect, they want to help people. But I think this is sort of your point, is that a lot of the workflows, the processes, to be compliant, we almost had to say compliance has to be first. Nobody wants to go to prison, so therefore connection is going to be second. And I think we just got too comfortable with that mindset. And I think to some degree, AI is almost, makes it worse, because when there is a lot of information and people no longer read that information because they're overloaded with information, you start losing context and trust. And so, like, the sort of combination of context, trust, and connection while staying compliance, right, compliant, is a very, very challenging problem. And I think Accenture in particular, and this is probably maybe easier to say, like, Accenture used this internally as well, to and won actually a bunch of HR training and executive communications awards using Relate2, in large part because I think they were really innovative at trying to say, how do we bring, very large, very global organizations. I don't know what's the latest in the number of employees, Luke, but
I think
it's
it's near 800,000. It's
800,000, so it's increasing, like, and I think being able to really connect them, and it's, even though it's increasing, it's still relatively centralized in terms of the playbooks, across regions and so on. And so it's been very interesting to see that appetite for innovation. But I think, unfortunately, I don't think as many organizations have done that historically. So HR has a lot of catching up to do, and they get stuck with, frankly, even, as much as they love what we were building back in the day at SuccessFactors, some of it is innovative and some of it is pretty old school, and you still log into the, employee intranets that we were powering, and it's just a bunch of PDFs that you download, and that don't really provide this differentiated experience. So we think, employees, to be successful in the age of AI, need to be enabled, more effectively. And I think this insurance use case that I described, that's almost like it's both employee communications, but it's also B2B2C, because insurance carriers can't sell insurance if nobody understands what it is and, is not willing to pay for it. And so that brokers suffer from that and so on. So it's sort of very interesting how there's some wedges, right? And the benefits is, for example, is a wedge into healthcare. It's a wedge into other parts of insurance. It's a wedge into financial retirement products, right? And, it's bought by HR and finance teams at the same time. So I wonder to what degree you're seeing kind of hotspots, so we identify this as a real hotspot of innovation, potentially, that gets us into, as a company, into a lot of regulated industries. And so that's one of the areas we really like. I'm curious, how do you see patterns of where innovation is happening, right? Besides front office, back office, are you seeing some sectors are just a little bit further along across your portfolio of clients, or some are lagging still?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start like with maybe some of the technologies that we think are hot, and I can talk about like maybe more industry specific some of the areas. But for the technologies, I mean, again, AI is just sucking the air out of the room. But I think it is shifting a little bit, right? In the past 2 years, it's very much okay, I want to find a use case and I want to solve it with AI. And I think now we've companies have gone through and actually implemented real AI applications. And they're now thinking about, okay, one, how do I now empower those agents to be more agentic, to actually give them authority to make decisions within a business, and not need as much of a human in the loop in order to execute on some of those activities. And so I think agentic is really going to be kind of the next wave that we're going to see around AI in real applications, right? Not just in deploying agents, but then really stringing them together and having more of an agentic infrastructure. And I think the drive for that is going to also have a lot of ripple effects for other innovative areas, like what I'm calling AI ops. Okay. So in the same trajectory that cloud went through, and everybody migrated to the cloud for data storage and data processing, and then all of a sudden they said, okay, now I can figure out what are the use cases in the cloud? How do I manage the costs in the cloud? How do I manage who's got access to these different systems? And so you actually went through this compression around cost ops for cloud. I think you're going to see that for AI as well, where now that all these agents have been deployed, you're going to have a bit of a reaction around like kind of your AI estate management. How are you managing the governance around all these tools, the access and controls around them, and the costs associated with the processing and compute power of these AI agents? And so I think all those wrapper elements are going to be really innovative territories for how can you solve as a startup company to help financial institutions as they manage their portfolio of AI tools. Very similar to the cloud, what cloud went through. Another interesting area that I think is also agent to agents. So similar to agentic, but think about like specifically in payments, we think about agentic commerce. You know, how are your agents making payments on your behalf or paying other agents? And I spent a lot of time in the digital currency, digital asset space before running the lab. I actually founded an organization called the Digital Dollar Project that advocates and explores tokenized versions of the dollar. And I think that's a really interesting space for AI of how stable coins can be the instrument for agents and how they make payments. And I was at a Stripe conference last week for the New York tour, and they were talking a lot about how they're deploying a stable coin focused on commerce for agent-to-agent commerce. So I think it's another interesting area. And the last one that I'll touch on is actually insurance. Mm-hmm. So people are actually going to ChatGPT to say, hey, chat, what are my best insurance policies? And ChatGPT will actually give them better insights in terms of, okay, this is your best option for cost-wise, for auto, for home, for life, health. And I think customers are using these generative AI tools to make decisions on their insurance portfolio. And so I think insurers need to figure out how to address this and how can they be more present so that their products can be embedded or informed with these AI agents that are being used publicly. So I think being present and helping to get your products and your services in front of people who are using AI is going to be another interesting frontier, especially for marketers as they think about how to tap into some of the tools and how do they meet customers where they are, where they're looking for services.
Yeah, it almost feels like if you're too slow to adapt, then the customers will go find other ways to answer the questions, right? And if you're kind of running old school ways of doing things, right, like you'll miss the there's kind of two issues. Like one is discovering the customers, right? And I think that's obviously relevant in more B2C businesses. And B2B, I think you already may know who the customers are, but then it's sort of the question of engaging and retaining them and having them continue to kind of think of you as a trusted advisor. And it feels like the slow pace of innovation is risky if you're waiting too long to figure this out, right? And somebody's likely to disrupt you. Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
I think the pace of innovation is happening faster than ever right now.
Okay. Pace of innovation or pace of real adoption?
I think pace of innovation. I think you're seeing it's way easier nowadays to create a company. It's way easier now to create a product, with vibe coding. Yeah. Now, and all the tools out there, you could stand up a product or an MVP in a matter of weeks or days. And so I think you're seeing even more companies flooding the market trying to solve problems. Yeah. And I also think we're in a regulatory regime right now that's in really embracing or trying to spur innovation across AI, digital currency, digital assets. And so there are so many companies coming out. There are so many innovative topics that are really being driven. I think I like the distinction you make around innovation and adoption. And I think to your point, I think financial institutions are a lot of large enterprises need to figure out how are they more agile and can actually explore and make decisions on innovative tech more quickly. So a lot of the work that I do at Accenture is helping financial institutions as they think through how to adopt, where to adopt, what are the impacts of innovation tech, and being a partner with them as they kind of wrestle or speed up as they look at all the solutions that are coming out.
So what are when you look at the companies, the startups that are able to get out of the, all right, there's a lot of innovation, lots of noise. What are the ones that you're picking in the lab where you're seeing succeed after the labs who are actually not just showing up, here's a new widgety, schmidgety, chatty, body, agenty, agentic, blah, 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 whatever is the flavor of the months, but actually are able to get the mind share, to get real deployment versus pilots, and to can break through the noise, besides relate to, of course, and like as you're as an alum, but like what are the patterns that you're seeing of companies that are solving this for real, deploying it for real, have longevity now, that they could continue to introduce new innovations once they deploy so that it expands.
Yeah, and if you're listening to this podcast, you're gonna get Luke's tips and tricks for
All
applying to
right.
the program. So consider this the inside scoop. But I think a couple of things. One, again, there's a lot of great technology out there, but really being able to clearly communicate what is the problem that you're solving, right? People buy solutions, they don't buy just technology. And so being able to really eloquently explain what is that solution, why are you differentiated, and what you solve goes above and beyond creative and great tech every single time. And actually, one of the financial institution partners that are part of the program last year said, I'm looking for solutions that could solve one thing perfectly as opposed to a lot of things potentially. And I really like that mindset around like really choosing a problem, nailing it, showing how you can solve that problem perfectly, and then you could scale from there as opposed to saying, hey, my platform can do it all. You tell me what you want it to do. But I think really being clear to communicate that problem statement is how you
I would
differentiate.
agree with that. I would say, like in retrospect, I would say when I if I had to rethink how I would go about building Relate2, like we definitely started out as was a very strong point of view on, hey, the most important information is locked in formats nobody wants to consume, but we didn't have as strong of a hypothesis as to which particular application of that we want to focus on at first. And so we were in an exploratory mode, and the exploratory mode led us to a lot of people being interested in this. And I think the more traction that we've had is once we said, oh, well, we have this narrow application in financial services, and like kind of let's work through this benefits example, which everybody spends a lot of money on and nobody gets value out of. And then there's personal tragedy, company wasting money, insurers not growing. And so when once we figured that out and had a consistent set of deployments on this, it's like life became much easier to replicate and to scale. And I feel like this is probably greedy second time founder that wants to build the decacorn right away. In my case was going for the broad set of applications, saying we could conquer everything. And I think we will eventually, but I think we had to consolidate, prove these, the thesis area. To your point, like do them really, really well, know what we're doing, get enough trips to the plates, versus saying, yeah, we'll mold your way. We'll be the next the startup that's pretending to be Accenture, which I think even Accenture doesn't do that thing. Like it has its own playbooks, right? Like, but a lot of tech people think that their tech is a build a bunch of Legos, and I think you don't get as much value from Legos as from bespoke solutions. Is that kind of am I riffing correctly with you in terms of your
Yeah,
point of
definitely. I
view?
think the Legos are important, but I think the above and beyond is really figuring out how they solve a problem, being really clear on that. So yeah, I fully agree with you, and I
So
think
all
you're
your
spot on
startups
that.
don't learn from Chevaleco mistakes, right? Like I think it's you look, but that said, there is always this question is, are you picking the right problem? And I don't know how easy, like, then maybe lab, like, you people should come into the lab maybe with one or two hypotheses and then test it out. Like, what's your advice for that? Because, like, if you
Yeah, and
can't
I mean, there's so
scale.
much reading out there. So, like, again, so applications are open. And if you look at the application opening, we actually announce what the top 10 themes are across the industries. And so, from all of our conversations, what are we hearing as the pain points? What are topical in terms of different technologies and different priorities areas? And I'll admit, it's across probably hundreds of topics that we ask them about, but we try to distill it down to what are the top 10. And so I think as you're looking to apply, you can look at those themes year to year and really see what are the problem statements, what are they wrestling with, and then dive in, right? Go deep and really try to understand, okay, within this area, how can I really be helpful and work with these financial institutions to help them solve the problem.
Got it. So like, getting back to the broad tips, so narrow down, solve one problem really well. What about, horsepower in terms of execution and follow-up, enterprise sales? It's not for the faint of heart to sell to some of these institutions that you're supporting. What's
No,
your
it's
perspective?
I'm honestly I'm amazed with some of these founders that like they respond to you at 2 in the morning all weekend long, any time of day they are on it. It is like a tour de force in order to be a entrepreneur nowadays. But I think like AI tools are really helping to enable that in terms of how to use better CRM tools, note-taking tools, follow-up tools. So I think being scrappy and savvy and using some of these tools will help you be more effective. But you're right. Even in the lab, we bring in these startup companies that are two guys and a dog, and we pair you up with, five or six large financial enterprises that each have their own demands and give you a very bespoke experience. And it's sink or swim. It's for you to figure out how you can keep up with that demand of, questions and follow-ups and really being able to service those types of companies. So there is a certain level of horsepower, to use your framing, that you need in order to work with the large tier one financial institutions and have that level of sophistication to be ready and at that point. But I think nowadays there's so many great tools out there that can help you be more nimble, more effective. And I think you're a great example of it, right? We're a small little incubator at the end of the day, and we're using tools like Relay2 to be more effective at better customer engagement. So I think tools like that out there can help, startup companies as they really try to scale and penetrate and have a better differentiated experience for their clients.
Got it. What other things that you wish you knew when you were earlier days working, pre-Accenture in more entrepreneurial kind of ecosystem, now that you've seen the pattern match across, the couple of years in the program, and you're heading into your kind of third year? Like, what would you say are some of the things that you wish you knew earlier, or you want to advise people kind of get ahead of the game,
Yeah, such
in
a
helping them
great, fun
scale?
question. I'll also say, so I in another past life, I actually worked for a startup company in an incubator, smaller incubator. And so I was on the other side of the table of in a startup, what do you look for in an incubator? And so more than a decade later, it's kind of fun to be in this role now. But to answer your question, what would I've maybe done differently or some things to think about? Probably like using leaning into the network. There are so many like great people out there that really want to help young entrepreneurs, young founders, and want to throw money at great technologies and great problems as well. And so I think like really building those relationships. Alex, you and I are friends at this point, know each other for over a year, and I think like having those relationships, leaning on your network, building that community around you will really help you be more effective, both from the perspective of helping to find problems and jam on solutions and that shared learning between each other, but also to help you get ahead and pull each other up. And again, back to the lab, I think really a unique program that's a civic-minded nature to it. And so everybody that's coming to the table is to help startup companies and to help drive innovation. And it's all the right reasons, right, that you're building this community of people that really want to be helpful, want to co-create, want to jam on innovation topics, and not just innovation theater, but really to drive unique problems or unique solutions in the market. And so I think finding those people and leaning into them and making them part of your cohort, your army, is what I wish I did earlier in my career.
Yeah, I would very much echo that. There, I think there's a human tendency to assume everything is the same, everybody is the same, but no, there are people that are kind of high energy creators, play paid forward folks like yourself, like the program, and they're first of all a lot more fun to be around, right? And I think energy is important, and I think people underestimate how important is positive energy. Not like a positive, will you can do anything you want, you know, no constraints, no, but like positive, like in the can-do style, directed in the you know, hopefully faster moving waters direction. But particularly in the enterprise, there's a lot of rejections, right? Like there's a lot of things that don't go, there's a lot of hiccups, there's, you know, ups and downs on a regular basis. And so having people that understand that process, that like it, that like to get things done, in larger organizations, it's a special breed. You can't just go even to the, you know, relatively innovative organizations, quote unquote, like Google or AWS. Like, not everybody is going to be the innovator in there, and is going to kind of really enjoy riffing. And I think this applies to all organizations. So the energy and camaraderie, and then I think the world that we live in, at least from go-to-market perspective that I see, is, you know, unfortunately AI is ruining it. It's killing nuance. It's kind of, you know, we're having these SDR approaches, we're having crazy LinkedIn, you know bombarding us every day. You know, if I get bombarded like that as a CEO of a relatively small organization, I can only imagine what some other folks are getting bombarded with. And so finding a way to find these warm connections, to use the network to humanize the interactions and be really authentic. And so I'm really grateful to you for joining, and, you know, people, so people could get a chance to vibe the program. And vibe that, you know, Accenture has these amazing new, you know, talented leaders like yourself that are promoting innovation, really bleeding it, and, you know, making concrete steps. I think this is, you know, a lot more fun to have co-conspirators on the journey.
Yeah, and it should be fun, right? Innovation should be fun. I think it's for some of the financial institutions, this is the best part of their week. They get to spend time with young, crazy founders and talk about AI and quantum and blockchain and crypto, and it's a fun area. So lean in.
All right, so we're vacation basically. We're like
yeah. I feel like I'm on vacation right now.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
we'll do this over drinks next time. So
yeah. Well, on over drinks, like what are the themes that, you know, that we've talked about some of the innovation themes that you have for this year that you're bringing up, but like let's you know, look out 5 years out into the future, right? You're, you know, like, and maybe in the area that you're kind of a pioneer on around digital currencies, you know, what are you envisioning? You know, what are some things that, you know, you're seeing coming both from the startups and the larger institutions that I think right now are still hazy, but in your view are going to be inevitable trends that we need to be paying attention to?
Yeah, and we touch on a couple of them. And like the ones that are like agentic commerce, I think are so fascinating, but honestly, I think are still years away from being real in the market. And it's going to take smart innovators and a lot of security and probably clever regulation in order to really have this work. But I think we're going to be in a future eventually where it's agent-to-agent payments, agent-to-agent shopping, you know, agent-to-agents choosing your insurance policy or helping to personalize what makes the most sense for you. And I think that is a world that we're driving to. And hopefully it does like carve out more time for humans to be human and kind of get together in real life and do what humans really do well, that connectivity, that engagement, that creativity, and let the agents do some of the bureaucracy and the like the operational side of life. So I think we're driving to that point. I think there's a lot of interesting startup companies that are solving for that around like agentic shopping to help embed products and payments into your AI experience. I think you can see that being happening more and more. But I think that's 5 years out until you're starting to see real market adoption with full fully blown agentic commerce. That's one. I think farther out, but an interesting one that keeps coming up is a bit of quantum or even just accelerated data processing in general. Quantum is probably really far out, but there's other more interim interesting solutions that we might see sooner. And I think some of the companies I'm talking to are scared of what they call the ChatGPT moment for quantum, which is, ChatGPT came
Something
out.
comes out and everybody is like, oh my, we got to catch up, right?
Exactly. And I think there's nervousness now after seeing what just happened in the past 2 years for other technologies as well, right? If somebody has that breakthrough in quantum that doesn't catch the industry with their pants down and everybody all of a sudden needs to rush and flood to go move into the space and work with startup companies. So I think there's an interest and an appetite to lean more into the innovation space to say, hey, what's coming down the pipeline? I want to know those hot
I don't want to
companies.
be caught with my pants down, so to speak. You know,
Exactly.
the not a politically correct description,
No, but I'll
but
use it. I like it. So I think that's,
to use Warren Buffett's, you don't want to be you want to be swimming naked when the tide is when the tide is down, right? Like that's
there you go.
probably, since it's Warren Buffett, it's more
Yeah.
acceptable. So
Right.
you want to be ready for that disruption is what we're seeing. Like there's some of these mega trends. And on the topic of digital currency, or obviously current administration is doing a lot of innovation. David Sacks comes from the VC community, you know, doing a lot of things rapidly, proactively here. What are you predicting based on your kind of having initiated this, you know, a few years ago and driving this initiative at Accenture?
Yeah, it's probably my favorite topic. It's near and dear to my heart, and been in the space for a while. And honestly, I'm really interested to know where it goes too. And I'm thinking a lot about it. And just to reflect for a minute, even as part of the lab, we had a lot of success with some of the early companies in the space. Digital Assets came out of the program. Messari came out of the program. There's been Air came out of the programs. A lot of really great digital currency, distributed ledger platforms that we've had success with. And I think if you look at the like trajectory of digital asset, digital currencies, you had kind of like the generation one of the exchanges, the layer zeros that were emerging, the private networks. I think you kind of had the layer, the next generation, which was like the stable coins, the NFTs, tokenization, much more like the money market funds, tokenized assets. I'm curious on like what the next gen is going to be. And I think it's actually going to be a bit of a blend of different technologies like AI enabling digital currencies and really powering the smart contracts of that as well. And honestly, I think blockchain and AI are a match made in heaven because with AI, one of the problems is the data management, the data provenance. Well, wait, we got a really great data provenance tool, which is distributed ledger and blockchain. And again, with blockchain, you've got these smart contracts that need logic to actually power them, and AI is really great as deciphering logic and instructing. And so I think they're going to be really interesting technologies that pair together. And I think that's what's going to be the next generation, the next frontier in the Web3 space. And so as part of that, I think what's going to be interesting is, again, back to agentic commerce, one that I think is really interesting in the crypto space. I think like automated treasury is going to be another big one around helping people search for yield. So as you move in and out of liquid instruments like stable coins or tokenized deposits and into yield-bearing assets like tokenized money market funds or crypto exposure and others, and having agents that can actually instruct the yield and go chase yield in different both domestically but also nationally.
There's gonna be no margin. All
Yeah,
the margin
right.
is gonna be eaten alive.
It's going to be interesting, but I think like that's where the market's going, and I think there's still like a lot to be done around the connectivity of these different instruments.
Great. Now, so let's wrap up with a little bit of a broader introduction to Partnership for New York City, and kind of how can people apply to the lab, and how it all comes together. Because you're pretty unique with the Partnership of New York City kind of platform structure, and so people need to know about what partnership is as well.
And the partnership is phenomenal. They are a civic fund that represents the 300 largest employers in New York City. And they're a private organization that helps mobilize the time, attention, and capital to advance the New York City and state communities. And so the lab is one of their initiatives, but they actually run a lab for public works and for transportation as well, transit tech. And so really an amazing organization, extremely well connected, well respected, and they help bring a lot of great players to the table as part of the program. And so they make a great partner to us at Accenture as more of the operational tech arm to their kind of civic nature and their New York community and connectivity aspect. So they run the lab with us. And to wrap it up, the lab, the applications are open right now. We're looking for great startup companies. If you're a founder of an early growth stage company, you're looking for exposure with the New York large financial institutions, there's really truly no better program than the FinTech Lab in order for you to get that exposure and that connectivity.
Mr. Luke Giancarlo, FinTech Innovation Lab. Luke, where can people find you personally as well so they could
LinkedIn is the
resubmit
best place for me. I've
LinkedIn?
been trying to stay off Twitter or I doom scroll, but LinkedIn is my one home base at this point.
Luke, amazing. So excited to have you as a leader for the lab in New York. So excited that you're building the future of FinTech, the future of New York. Thank you again for helping relate to AI and our journey, where we started was relate to pre-AI and became relate to AI in collaboration with the lab. And so can't, you know, such an indelible part of our success goes back to your organization. And I couldn't recommend more hire for startups that want to do real enterprise innovation to go and check it out.
Alex, thanks so much. Thank you for having me on the show. Really great chatting with you, and thanks for all the work you're doing as well.
Welcome back. Alex Shevelenko here. Thank you so much for listening to Experience Focused Leaders podcast. You can learn more about us at podcast.relateto.com, R-E-L-Y-T-O.com. Obviously, we would love for you to send this to people that you know who would be great speakers, or just share the nuggets that you took away from this episode with your community on social. And you could learn more about what we're up to on relateto.com. You could certainly connect with me on LinkedIn, where it's just very easy to spell my name. You have to have a master's in Ukrainian. It's Shevelenko, Shevelenko. Would love to connect so that we can move together the way the world communicates about its most important ideas. Thank you for listening. We hope to see you next time.